Well, we're in Jonah chapter 2, finishing up verse 2. And when we looked at this verse, I told you I divided it up into two parts, and we looked at the first part of it, which I call a cry of need. And he said, I cried by reason of my affliction unto the Lord. That's a cry of need. And there's nothing wrong with being in that place of need. This is Jonah giving this cry. This is Jonah, and his affliction is unique to him. He's in the belly of the great fish. He's been running from the Lord and turned around and run right back into the Lord. But we all come to that place where we have a great need and we cry out. And that's all the Lord wants us to do. This is the cry of Jonah. This is really the cry of the remnant in the last days, because he is a type of them. But also it is a picture of the Lord Jesus Christ crying out in his affliction. Because the latter part of this verse is such a testimony. There is that cry of need, and he knew exactly who to cry out to. And he wasn't ashamed to admit that he had a need. And when you get to the latter part of this verse, you see it's turned into a cry of faith. He heard me. That's his declaration. He heard me. And then he says, out of the belly of hell cried I. That's his desperation. And then you get to the latter part of this, and thou heardest my voice. That's his expectation. So you look at this verse that is a cry of faith, and it's threefold. There is this declaration, there is this desperation, and then there is this expectation. It's really interesting that he begins with, he heard me, and he ends with, he heard me. And sandwiched in between that is the desperate condition that he finds himself in, this place that he cannot escape from. And so he says, and he heard me. And that word heard simply means to answer and to respond. It's not a passive word where he's crying out unto the Lord and he's thinking, well, he heard the words that I'm saying. It means there's this answer and this response that he expects, because he knows he has heard me. When you look up heard, it means to answer and to give a response. And he believes that this will happen. Now, he may not know when it will happen. He may not know how it will happen, but he knows it will happen. And when we bring our needs to the Lord, and we do so in faith, we may not know how he's going to answer that need or when he's going to answer that need, but we know he will answer it. And really, when I call this a cry of faith, it's faith because faith believes God not only hears, but God answers. It's one thing to say, well, I know he hears me. It's another thing to take it one step further and say, I know he will answer. Now, that's not telling him how he should answer. It's just knowing that he will answer. And how does Jonah know this? Well, this is why I think it's so important when we look at the references that are attached to this psalm, which are mostly this book, because most of the references are from the Psalms. And I asked myself that question, well, how does Jonah know this? And it's because he remembers that there were others who gave this same cry. And he's remembering that. Because he's looking back, he's remembering the scriptures. And he's remembering the promises that are there in the scriptures. He's remembering that he's not alone. That's why it's so important to realize that you are connected to a body of believers, that you are connected to Christ through that body, and you are connected to one another and you're connected through the Word of God. And that's why it's so important to know the Word of God. David said, "Thy word have I hid in mine heart." He said that I might not sin against thee, but also we hide the word in our heart because in times of great need or trial, that word becomes a comfort to us. That word is there to strengthen us and empower us. And so he remembers and knows these scriptures. He doesn't have a book with him where he can turn and do a word search for, let's see, what does the Bible say about hell? And what does the Bible say about affliction? And what does the Bible say about this? He already knows. But in a time of need, the Spirit of God brings it up at that moment, just exactly what he needs. And there's a lot he could have drawn from, but everything that he draws from is basically from the Psalms, from those of like experiences, and from those Psalms especially that are messianic Psalms that point to Christ. And so I looked at I picked 1, 2, 3, 4 scriptures, 3 from the Psalms and 1 from elsewhere, that talk about other individuals that have given this cry of faith. But before the cry of faith, or after the cry of faith, is the unique position each individual was in, or condition each individual was in, that precipitated that cry. And so the first example is Psalm 22, verse 24. And this is the cry of the afflicted man, which certainly fits Jeremiah, because he said, this is the reason that I'm crying out, by reason of my affliction. So Psalm 22:24 says, "For he hath not despised nor abhorred the affliction of the afflicted, neither hath he hid his face from him, but when he cried unto him, he heard." And the references that I picked focus on he cried and he heard. But preceding that is somebody that was in affliction, afflicted. And the Lord didn't hide his face. You know, Jonah could have thought, well, why should I even cry out unto the Lord? Because I've run from him. And obviously, I'm in this place because I have run from him, and he is obviously punishing me or chastising me, and he probably won't even hear me when I cry. But the psalmist says he will not despise or turn away from that affliction or hide his face from me because of that affliction, even if that affliction is justified or caused by him. He's just waiting for me to cry out. And so when I cried unto him, he heard. How many people come to a place where they think, well, I guess I deserve this. I guess there's no point in turning to the Lord or crying out to the Lord. It's just the way it's going to be. And that's not what Jonah did. He didn't give up. This is also, if you turn to Psalm 34:6, the cry of another type of man. Psalm 34:6 says, "This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him, and saved him out of all his troubles." I guess you could say that's also a troubled man, but it begins with this poor man, this needy man, this destitute man. He was willing to cry, and he knew that the Lord heard him. So it doesn't matter what position somebody finds himself in. If you just cry, the Lord will hear. Psalm 65:2 is, in a sense, the cry of all men, because it's a general cry. It says, "O thou that hearest prayer, unto thee shall all flesh come." I like that. All flesh. Whoever will cry out unto the Lord and come to him, he will hear. Isn't that the salvation cry? Whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. It is the cry of any man without distinction. Let's say you're not poor, or you're not afflicted, or you're not destitute, or you're not this, or you're not that, but you are in a place where you cry out unto the Lord, and he will hear. I like what the last reference that I picked was something that, a reference that was not from the Psalms, it was from Lamentations. It was from Jeremiah, his words in Lamentations chapter 3, verse 56. Actually, I really love just about everything in that third chapter of Lamentation, because it's, I guess you could say, a wonderful portrait of Jeremiah, who gets so wrapped up in and wrapped around in everything that he's going through and focused on it, that all that for a while that's all he sees. And then he remembers to look at the Lord. And he looks at the Lord and he remembers his promises, that his mercies fail not. But in Lamentations 3:56, he says, "Thou hast heard my voice. Hide not thine ear at my breathing, at my cry." I just like the way that's phrased, because sometimes we have this cry that we can give forth, and sometimes that cry is just a breath. All it is just a little breath of acknowledging our need. And he said, "Thou hast heard." And he's not saying, "Oh, please don't hide thy ear from my breathing." He's really saying, "I know you will not hide your ear, because you've heard my voice. I know you won't not hear. I know that you will hear." And what you see here in this first part of his declaration, "Thou hast heard me, answered me, responded to me," is you see that faith sees the impossible as possible. Faith just sees and believes. And it's hard to imagine. Of course, this has so many different levels of who you can apply it to. But if you just look at Jonah, he's in the belly of that great fish. I have no idea what that must feel like or look like, what that experience is like. You know, is he cramped, or is it that great fish big enough he can stand up or sit up or walk around, or what? But faith sees and faith believes that I don't care if I'm deep down in the belly of this fish, he hears me. He hears me. That's why that cry can be just from the heart if your lips are sealed. And you aren't allowed to speak, or you can't speak. Somehow you've been silenced. It doesn't matter. If that cry goes up, it's from the heart, and the Lord hears it loud and clear. And I just thought, what a description this is, because it's hard to comprehend. Jonah's describes the belly of the fish as the belly of hell, which is what he's going to talk about next. That's what it feels like to him. When he's in the belly of the ship, he's in an enclosed place and a dark place, but it's a place of his choosing. Now, this place is so much more worse. He's in an enclosed place, a dark place, a terrible place, a terrifying place, and it's not a place of his choosing. He was silent in the belly of the ship and didn't cry out unto the Lord, even in the midst of the storm, as far as we know. But when it comes to the belly of the great fish, he cries out. Sometimes the Lord has to take us out to a place that forces that cry from us. So you see his desperation in that phrase. He cried out of the belly of hell, cried I. Out of, really, and when I looked that up, out of the belly of is just one, the same word. actually out of the belly of hell is just one word, basically. You know, there was no word for out of, and there was no word for belly. It was just out of the belly of hell, and there was just one word, which is really just describing hell. But I thought of that out of, and it just shows that Jonah is in this place, and yet he's able to pray out of this place. We can pray out of whatever place we are in. He's in it, but he can still pray out of it. There aren't any bars holding back his prayer. His body is imprisoned, but you know what? His spirit is not. And he may be desperate, because this is a cry of desperation, a cry of faith based on desperation, but he is crying because there is hope. The Lord hears me. I'm not sure what he's going to say or how he's going to answer, but he hears my cry. And I was just really struck by, it doesn't matter where you are, you can cry out of that place. And that also shows you that Jonah is aware, and he's conscious, and he knows where he is, and he knows he cannot escape by himself. And he shows us, in a sense, because this is the belly of hell, as he describes it, that the dead are aware of where they are. And they know that they cannot escape by themselves. And that word hell, of course, is Sheol. And it's usually translated the pit, or hell, or the grave. You'll find that throughout the Old Testament, it's the same word, depending on how it's used. It's the same word. It's really interesting. You know, Jonah began by sleeping in the belly of the ship, and he ended up by being swallowed up by a great fish. You know, he was sleeping, and then he swallowed up. When he was sleeping, that was his choice. When he was swallowed up, that was God's choice. But when he describes what it feels like as far as where he is, he says it's the grave. It is the pit. It is the place where the dead go and are waiting. It's a place of waiting. When you look up Sheol, Strong says it's the place where the dead reside. Vine says the place of the dead, and it's found 65 times in the Hebrew Bible. And you know, it refers to, it's like an as far as they picture it, an underground cavern to which all the buried dead go. Their bodies remain in the grave, but they go somewhere. I mentioned tonight that my cousin Chris, I keep forgetting, most of my family's Catholic, said they were going to say a mass for my mother. So obviously they believe her spirit has gone somewhere other than in the presence of the Lord. They may get part of that. I know Carolyn mentioned it's from the Maccabees, but also they probably get some of this from Sheol, which you have the Sheol is divided into two portions, an upper portion and a lower portion. It's a place where the dead resided, and they all believe that. Vine says that, you know, when you look up hell in the Old Testament, the first thing that Vine said was, well, it was the ultimate resting place for all mankind. It's just where you went when you died. For I will go down into the grave unto my son. Jacob said this, I will go down into the grave unto my son mourning. You know, he said, I'm just going to go down to the grave, to that place, and my spirit will be mourning. It was thought to be a land of no return. Job says, then I shall go the way whence I shall not return. And you see that in Job 16:22. Job says also, they shall go down to the bars of the pit when our rest together is in the dust. Kind of, he knows that this is where we're all going to go. And that's Job 17:16. Most often it is picturing either distress or destruction. But what really speaks to my heart is this is a place where Jonah is waiting for something to happen. He's preserved in that place. He's aware in that place. He can communicate to God in that place. So, and Jesus really describes this place as having two compartments also. Although Jesus doesn't say this is Upper Sheol and this is Lower Sheol, you know, if we were to go over to the 16th chapter of Luke and read the account of the rich man and the beggar Lazarus, who was at his gate begging for crumbs and who died and went to Abraham's bosom, and then the rich man died and he went to another place, which was a place of wailing and gnashing of teeth, and he was aware. But also he could see Lazarus in Abraham's bosom. So there were two places there Jesus talked about. And Lazarus went to Upper Sheol, which was the Jews considered the place of the righteous dead, those that believed God's promises and were waiting for those promises to be fulfilled. And there was another place that the unrighteous dead would go to. And it was a place of awareness also. One place was a place of hope, and the other place was a place of hopelessness. Jonah's in a place of hope. Despite everything that he's done, he's in that place of hope. And I got to thinking, there's only one escape from that place. Resurrection. That's the only escape from that place. And even Daniel tells us in that 12th chapter of Daniel, in the second verse, Daniel tells us that some will be raised to everlasting life and some to everlasting shame. So there we see there is a resurrection of the dead, the just and the unjust. And Martha knew that Lazarus would be raised. She knew that there was a resurrection because she told Jesus that he would rise again in the resurrection of the last days. So she believed in a resurrection. And she believed that obviously her brother was just, that there was a resurrection that wouldn't entail suffering for eternity. And Jesus, of course, declared to her, "Who is the resurrection?" "I am the resurrection." You read that 11th chapter of John, and you really see the resurrection there. And when Jesus arose from the dead, we find in Matthew 27 that many of the saints which slept did what? They arose, and they walked about, and people saw them. My point being, the only way out of that place, which is hell, which is that holding place where Upper Sheol, where Jonah is in type, is resurrection. That's the only escape out of there. And even Lower Sheol, the only way that you can escape that place is resurrection, when you stand before the Lord at the last day and he judges you. It's the resurrection where you're of contempt, everlasting contempt or judgment. And Paul tells us that when Jesus rose from the dead, he led what captive? Captivity captive. He emptied out Upper Sheol, and those individuals were delivered. Jonah is a captive waiting to be set free. That's really what he is. He's a captive waiting to be set free. He is a picture of the Lord Jesus Christ, and who has died, who died and who was buried. And you know, people don't think often about, well, what happened during those 3 days when he was buried. He was someplace, and he was preaching to the spirits in prison, and he was showing those that had looked forward to the promises of God that those promises had been fulfilled in him. And when he rose from the dead, they came up with him. Jonah is waiting for resurrection, in a sense. And when that fish vomits him out on dry land, that's a picture of resurrection. It's a picture of Christ coming up in resurrection. And because of that, we all have that hope set before us. Paul tells us that in Thessalonians that we don't grieve and sorrow as others do because we have a hope set before us. We shall not all sleep, but we shall be changed. And there'll be a trumpet and a voice and a shout that will bring us up from the grave. So Jonah knew or described hell as a place of sorrow and a place of pain. And he could do this because he knew the scriptures, because that's what has been written specifically. It's a place that he cried out from, and it's the same place that Jesus cried out from. And it's a place that he will be delivered from. It's a place that Jesus was delivered from. And you really see those two descriptions of what hell is like in two scriptures that I want you to look at. And the first is Psalm 18, verses 4 through 6. Although it was hard not to pin down a bunch of other verses in this psalm. Psalm 18, verses 4 through 6 says, "The sorrows of death compassed me." That's how it starts out. Verse 5 says, and this is what I wanted you to see, "The sorrows of hell compassed me about. The snares of death prevented me. And in my distress I called upon the Lord, and I cried unto my God." Hell there has an adjective preceding it that describes it. And that's the only way that Jonah could describe it, because that's really how it's described in the Psalms. Sorrows of hell. You really see that attached. You see the sorrow attached to it. Your life is cut off. You're cut off from everybody. And at this point in time, you're cut off from God's presence. Then in Psalm 116, verse 3, it says, "The sorrows of death compassed me." A little bit like Psalm 18, 4, "The sorrows of death compassed me. And the pains of hell got hold upon me. And I found trouble and sorrow." So you wouldn't think that, you would think that if that's his only perspective of what hell is like, because he said, this is a place that I'm crying out to you from, the belly of hell, the very center of it. And it's a place of sorrow and it's a place of pain. And yet, somehow he has hope that in the midst of that sorrow and that pain, and all he knows about hell are is what is written here in the scriptures, and you don't find anything good. I think I was reading Vines, and Vines said basically, you know, there's nothing really good written about hell. Everything's negative about it, especially if you look in the Old Testament. There's nothing that you can find that's good, and yet Jonah is in that place, and yet he has hope. Faith overcomes and overshadows the only thing that he knows.
Well, I'm just wondering, when you're talking about hell, are you talking about the lower Sheol, or are you talking about upper Sheol and just the sorrows of being in an indeterminate place until...
Yeah, this is upper Sheol.
Okay.
Because all that you're going to hear in lower Sheol is wailing and gnashing of teeth. There is no crying out unto the Lord and articulating. This is remembering the loss of everything, and that sorrow can entail a lot of different things. But what really strikes me is that despite everything that he knows about how negative this place is, he still has hope. And those that were in Upper Sheol still have their faith. It's Abraham's bosom. It is, you don't lose sight of those promises that God has given you. They are still there. You don't lose sight of those scriptures that you have known. They're still there. Because when Jesus came, there was this recognition of the fulfillment of what they hoped for. So my point is, it doesn't matter where he is, God hears him. Doesn't matter where he is, God hears him. And this is where you see that expectation. That expectation is, and thou heardest my voice. You know, that's his faith. You've heard. And it's really interesting because has he heard anything back from God yet? Has God spoken to him yet? Has he been vomited out of that fish's belly yet? No. But he said, you have heard my voice. He says this before God answers. And he doesn't have any doubt. He believes. This is still a man of faith, even though he has been disobedient. But he knows who his God is. And he knows that he can cry out to him. Makes you wonder, you know, if Jonah is the type of Jesus, did Jesus have any conversations with God while he was in the heart of hell? And he was preaching, but was he still crying out to his God, waiting for his deliverance? We really don't know. But he knew the scriptures. He knew the promise that was set before him, and he had that hope, and he cried out. And he heard my prayer. So he wasn't just preaching there, he was praying also. So it doesn't matter where he is, God hears him. And so you see his faith, thou heardest me. And then you see hear his voice. It's my voice. It is the voice of supplication. It is the voice of suffering. It is the voice of submission. But it is my voice. And even if he couldn't articulate it, even if in the fish that sounded an echo, his voice was still heard. And it is my voice. It's my cry. Nobody can do it for me. I'm in this place. I'm crying out unto you. And I picked three people that knew this, that were cried out from this place, cried out from hell. Psalm 86:13, we find David saying, "For great is thy mercy toward me, and thou hast delivered my soul from the lowest hell." You know, David was in that place. Remember I told you hell can also speak of distress, great distress or great destruction. You can picture that. David, think about how much he went through in his life and how many times he cried out unto the Lord. And when he is delivered, he rejoices. But in what I just read here in Psalm 86:13, he says, "Great is thy mercy toward me," first. Then he says, "And you have delivered me." I mean, he sees God's mercy first. He sees it by faith. And then he looks back and he said, "And you delivered me." And guess where you delivered me from? The lowest hell. There isn't a place deep down far enough away from you that you can't reach out and bring me out. And then Lamentation 3:55, Jeremiah says, "I called upon thy name, O Lord, out of the low dungeon." That's where Jeremiah was. And I don't know if that was that pit where he was sunk deep. This is afterwards, but we know Jeremiah was put down into a pit, sunk deep in the mire. And he cried out from that place, and the Lord heard him. And by the way, the Lord sent somebody to take him out, too. And Jesus knew this and waited in this place. Because even though Psalm 16:10 is not it see, who is penned years before Jesus was ever sent to that cross and crucified and buried in that tomb. Peter, on the day of Pentecost, when he preaches that sermon, quotes Psalm 16:10, and he says, "This is really the Lord Jesus Christ giving forth this cry." Remember, prophecy has a present fulfillment and a future fulfillment. And when we look at Jonah, it's present fulfillment, future fulfillment, and real future fulfillment. Jesus said, "For thou wilt not leave my soul in hell, and neither wilt thou suffer thine holy one to see corruption." Jesus knew, Jeremiah knew, David knew, so many others knew that if you're in that place, all you have to do is cry out, and you can have that expectation that in God's time and in God's way, he will deliver. And so Jonah is acknowledging his need and crying out in his need, knowing that he will be delivered. But as we look at the rest of these verses, we really get a personal glimpse of what he's feeling, what he's been through, his hopes and his fears. It kind of goes back and forth between hope and fear, but faith overshadows it all. Until he finally says, "Salvation is of the Lord."